Okay, now it's time for principle number three in Think and Grow Rich. And Don, you're up at the top of the batting order on this.
Okay. Today we're going to talk about auto-suggestion. And before we get very deep into auto-suggestion, maybe it would be a good idea if we started with the concept of a mind that was beginning to develop and was popular at the time this book was published. I mean, the concept of the mind becoming from Freud and all the new discoveries that were being made, the emergence of the subconscious was becoming popular, was part of becoming pop culture, I guess you could say. And that took into account that the mind had two main parts. The conscious mind, that part where we make the decisions, the part that we're aware of, what we are thinking of, your awareness of where you are now, your awareness of listening to me and what I'm saying, that's all in your conscious mind. Subconscious mind is what it says, below that part of your mind that was below or out of your consciousness. And that was a huge, that was viewed as a huge quantity of data and information that was a collection of all the experience that you've ever had. Everything that you've ever done, everything that you've ever learned, it's all the thoughts and ideas about yourself that control and govern your life, your behavior. That was all stored in your subconscious mind. It was viewed as the majority of brain power, and most of our experiences were contained there. And the good part about that is that this was all out of our awareness so that it wouldn't interfere with our day-to-day activity. I mean, if you had to deal with that volume of information all the time, it could be impossible for the mind to handle. So that's all out of your consciousness, but it has a powerful effect on your life. The other thing that you need to keep in mind is that we have some control by communicating with this vast sea of material called our subconscious mind. We can't control what it does, but we have learned to put thoughts into it that affect how it operates. So why would we want to communicate with our subconscious mind? Well, like I say, because it controls so much of our life that communicating with it would be very powerful and useful. We want to harness that power. We would like to use it to work on our behalf. And we want to use it to be more successful, to be more prosperous, the focus of this publication, to improve our performance and our day-to-day activities. And we also wanted to communicate with it because we wanted to feed it the kinds of thoughts that improve our life, that give us what we want. The subconscious mind is very fertile. I mean, you might compare that to a field where it has very fertile soil. In a field, you get what you sow. And if you plant peas, you get peas. If you plant carrots, you get carrots. You don't plant peas and get carrots. That would be ridiculous. Well, it's pretty much the same with your subconscious mind. You can plant seeds in your subconscious mind that come, that blossom and bear fruit. And you get what you plant. I mean, that's an old thing. You know, you sow what you... you reap what you sow. Well, that's really very true of your subconscious mind. And a very interesting analogy is that you plant an acorn, and it grows into an enormous tree. Well, how did it do all of that? How did that small acorn turn into that giant tree? Well, it did it by drawing to it the things in the soil that it needs to grow. It drew to it the nourishment that it needed. It brought to it whatever it takes to turn into a tree. Well, thoughts plant into your subconscious mind seem to work the same way. Thoughts planted in the soil of your subconscious and nurtured, like the acorn was, or like a seed, but it's nurtured a little differently. You nurture it with faith, belief, and action. And when you do that, those thoughts seem to draw to it whatever they need to grow into maturity as well. Now, how does this happen? How do thoughts draw to it what they need in the universe to become reality? Well, that mechanism is beyond our knowledge. Some attribute it to religion. Some attribute it to quantum physics. Some to a universal power. It makes no difference what you attribute it to, but the fact is this, is that a thought planted in your mind and nourished can turn and will turn into reality. But it takes constant attention and belief. Now, I know this may sound far-fetched to you, and you may not be familiar with the term autosuggestion, but let me just tell you that autosuggestion has many names. It's been called self-hypnosis, auto-conditioning, meditation, self-talk, even prayer. And that's all much the same thing. It has the common characteristics of planting a thought in your subconscious mind, and whatever forces are present in the universe to help you bring it into reality. There's some things about doing this that we know for sure. We know that a thought is that has enormous power, and why we're not too sure of. But we know that the subconscious mind can't distinguish between a real experience and a vividly imagined experience. It can't tell the difference. And so that's one of the key ways in which we communicate with the subconscious mind. That's how we put there the thoughts. That's how we give it the experiences we want it to have, by vividly imagining something, picturing it in our mind. And we know that pictures in our mind have much more power than words. In fact, reading what the book says about auto-conditioning, you'll discover it focuses more on words. But research since this book was written tells that our mind thinks more in images and pictures, and they're much more powerful in communicating with that. So when we vividly see success in our mind, we have success. When we vividly see in our mind is experiencing a wealth and happiness and gaining the things that we want in life, our subconscious mind can't tell the difference between the reality of having it and not having it. It believes what it sees, and so we plant the pictures so it can see what we want it to see. And that's basically what we do with auto-suggestion, regardless of what we call it. There's been some experiments that you may have even read about and forgotten about that really prove how true this is. There was a classic psychological experiment where they took basketball team and divided them into two sections. And one section actually practiced shooting baskets for so many minutes a day. The other part of the team just sat and vividly imagined. They closed their eyes and they imagined that they were shooting baskets. But when they shot the baskets in their mind, they always, you know, made the basket. At the end of the testing period, they actually went out on the courts and both teams shot baskets. And as you might have guessed, the team that had only imagined shooting the baskets did a slightly better job than the people who had actually been shooting baskets. Why? Because their subconscious mind had been rehearsing that over and over and seeing them as successful and seeing them make the baskets. And that vivid rehearsal in their mind improved their performance. That's why this kind of activity, imagining, viewing your success, viewing your performance, is so common with Olympic athletes. And that's why so many salesmen will practice in their minds sitting in front of the client and making the sale before they ever walk into the office, because they are programming their subconscious mind to already see them as successful and having that which they desire. So that's kind of an overview about auto-suggestion. There are some principles here I'd like to just mention briefly, is that you must remember, one, that images are more important than words. You need to see, feel, taste, and touch your dream whenever possible. And that's also number two, was add the sounds to your vision. Add taste and feel. Anything you can, any other sensory experiences that you can add to your suggestion helps. Do it daily. Practice it often. You improve with practice. And finally, be patient. You never know how long it's going to take for that seed to grow. So you have to do this consistently, and you have to have patience. Guys, now your comments on this.
Well, Don, I was going to say this is such an important chapter, and I like the fact that Napoleon Hill pointed out how important it is, because auto-suggestion is the kingpin of the engine he's building here with this book, through which the rest of the book operates. All the other principles are far more successful and happen and are considered tools for successful auto-suggestion rather than just, you know, so they are actually a part of this chapter, and they all wrap around. He even points back to the steps in Chapter 2, that six steps for stating your goal and repeating it as the actual steps that you need to use for auto-suggestion and how this is getting it started. The other thing I like is the picture in your mind of the subconscious mind. Auto-suggestion is kind of like the key for getting past the guard, for putting these thoughts into your subconscious. And once there, your everything in you starts gearing up to make it happen, just like your analogy with the basketball players. And you have absolute control over it. And what I wanted to add is the powerful note that, you know, the picturing, the idea is emotion, to state your goals with emotion, not just flatly read them, but to emote strongly, I will have this. I will have X dollars in 6 months. I see it in my hands. And to feel it as you say it is the real key that gets past that guard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like what Napoleon says about concentration as it relates to auto-suggestion. It's really so important to, you know, have a definite goal that you plant in your subconscious mind. Some people say, oh, I'd like to be a millionaire, or, hey, 2 or 3 million would be even better. That's not the right way to do it. You need a specific amount of money, Napoleon mentions, that your goal is set on and that you put into your subconscious mind. You want a beautiful house in a certain neighborhood, you should know exactly what those houses cost. And if you want to buy and soon enjoy a new Cadillac or Mercedes, you should go to a dealership and find out exactly what that Cadillac or Mercedes will cost. So be very specific when you set your mind to this and concentrate on it and meditate on it and put it into your subconscious. The subconscious mind is like a sponge, and most of the stuff that's going in there, you consciously are not putting there, but it's going there nevertheless. And much of it is negative that works against you. You know, the subconscious mind isn't there to help you achieve all the goals you want. It's to give you exactly what you programmed it for. So if you program it unconsciously with a lot of negative thoughts and low self-esteem, that's what you'll see in your life. So it's such an important chapter in his book, because it tells us that as we think, so we shall see and reap. And to me, that just tells me that I have to concentrate and I have to program my subconscious mind rather than let a lot of stuff go into it that I don't want to be there.
And, you know, it's widely believed that we use less than 10% of the capacity, our capabilities of our mind. And, well, a lot of what we're talking about right now involves being proactive and actions and be specific. There's also an element of being passive. And so when Don was saying about meditation and self-hypnosis, two things of which I practice and know quite a bit about, this is a time where you actually let go, and it's not an action. Instead, you're letting that extra 90% of your capacity take over. And a you know, one term, one description of self-hypnosis is bypassing the critical faculty to create selective thinking. What that means in English is that you are releasing all judgment. And this is also a practice of meditation, is when you are being passive and letting your subconscious mind take over. And I know for me, my best ideas come not when I'm searching for them, not when I'm racking my brain, but in the middle of the night when I wake up, when I'm in a dream, which is a state of subconscious, or in meditation. And even then, in meditation, when the thought comes in, I let it pass, and I'm confident. I know I won't forget. It will come back to me, and it always does. But it's in this passive state where you let the mind take over, where your best ideas, where all that extra stuff, the majority of your potential comes out for you.
Well, and Randy, while you've got the floor, there's something that you told our group privately, and you don't have to go into all the details, but I thought it was a powerful demonstration of the subconscious mind. Randy, out of all of our group, he is, right now anyway, I'm sure there's some of our members that are trying to beat him, but he is the greatest platform selling speaker in our whole group at the current time. And so all of us, we wonder, what is this guy's secret? Why is he able to sell? You know, he makes more money than any of us do when it comes to getting up and speaking on the platform. And Randy, you shared something with us that is a powerful demonstration of this technique that Don described. Maybe you can briefly just touch on that.
Oh, great. I'm happy to. And thanks, TJ, because that actually does bring up a perfect example. You know, we've been talking about the basketball example, and Don and I believe Alan might have mentioned it as well, that the subconscious mind cannot tell the difference between, you know, reality, like fact and fiction. So what I do as a technique is to get myself in a certain state. And first of all, when we talk about platform selling, let's understand that. All selling is a transfer of enthusiasm. That's all selling is, just transferring the enthusiasm. Okay, knowing that, I know that I need to be enthusiastic when I go and talk. And I'm almost always naturally there. But I always can be there and always escalate that state of enthusiasm by basically playing tricks in my mind before I go out. Now, this is actually an acting skill. This is what method actors do. First of all, what I do is I get myself very enthusiastic, but it doesn't necessarily have to be, and it usually is anyway, but in case it isn't for whatever reason that day, I have to get myself very enthusiastic. What I'm going to say is it doesn't have to be related specifically to whatever I'm going to be talking about. I need to get my mind into that state, and then all the words that come out, they get transferred with the enthusiasm that's in me, regardless, again, of how that enthusiasm got built up. So what I do is in my mind is, depending on where I'm at in my life, and right now, I'll share something, which, you know, my wife might kill me if she found this out. She doesn't usually listen to our tapes.
We don't want to hear anything about your sex life, Randy.
No, well, it's sort of related, but, you know, right now we want to go for a fourth child. So, at the moment, and even as I talk about this now, you could probably hear and feel the enthusiasm. I know my body right now is reacting to that thought. We're excited about trying for another child. Well, the trying part's more exciting for me than my wife. But actually having that child is a very exciting, you know, goal of ours. So this is a recent decision. We figure we'll go for it again, and maybe we'll have whatever we're blessed with. Now, so I just have to think about that in my mind, in my imagination. And or let me make this strong point too. For me, that works right now at this moment. Here's something else really interesting. Going back to our mind doesn't know the difference between reality or not. I could create a situation in my mind that isn't real and still get the same effect. Now, that's harder to do, and it's only necessary when you don't have something in your life that you can access right away to get your enthusiasm up. The point being in all of this, instead of I'll believe it when I see it, did I get this reversed already? Instead of I'll believe it when I'll see it, it's I'll see it, then I'll believe it. You picture this in your mind, and then you look for the reality. And even if the reality doesn't come, this is a technique you can do to access different states of potential within you.
Well, and Randy, while you got the floor, why don't you go? You're up next on the fourth of Napoleon Hill's principles, and I'm just watching the clock here to keep us all on time. Why don't you just go ahead and introduce that to our listeners now?
Oh, sure. So the fourth step toward riches in Napoleon Hill's great work is specialized knowledge, and it says in the book, knowledge will not attract money unless it is organized and intelligently directed through practical plans of action to the definite end of accumulation of money. And this relates to what Russ was saying about being specific, and then it also is somewhat the reverse of what I was just talking about of action, of, you know, being passive. This is where you have action. And when I was doing a presentation several years ago as a speaker slash magician for a group of trainers, other people who go out and train corporate executives on how to be more successful in their businesses. And I had the honor of actually training some of these people through a large company called Zinger Miller. And in essence, my presentation to them was to determine in their minds, so they can translate this to their executives they were training, how important it is to differentiate between knowledge and skill. Knowledge versus skill is so important. And the difference between knowledge and skill, knowledge is when you're reading stuff, you know, you're learning stuff, you're going out, you're listening now. This is knowledge. You're gaining knowledge today by listening to this. But unless you go out and practice these principles, you will never be skilled at it. So going back to the book, it also says knowledge is only potential power. It becomes power only when and if it is organized into definite plans of action and directed to a definite end. So you take your knowledge, that's the first step. You develop it into skill through practice. And through this, and ultimately, you become very specific with this information, specific, specialized knowledge. As we speak right now, I'm actually, I've been here all week doing business with a good friend of mine in Las Vegas. That's where I'm at now. I'm at his house. And he, at this very moment, as we speak in the other room, he is doing what he does 5 days a week and gets paid handsomely for it. He's doing day trading. Now, trading stocks. But here's the thing. He's not just trading any stock. He's trading one very specific type of stock. And I've been listening to him for a few days here. And E-mini futures is what it is. And so I don't even really know what those are. I just know that's what he specializes in. So of all the different types of stocks and currencies and things that you can trade, that's what he does. Now, here's the thing. He's not making the majority of his money, although he wins almost, you know, almost every day. He bets small. But that's not where he's making his money. He's making his money because he is so specialized in this that he has other people that are listening in right now as he does the trades, and they're watching through software, you know, that's available on the internet where people can get an account. They can go in and they can see his every move, got a headset on, they can hear him, and they're paying him $300 a month, and he has over 50 subscribers right now, so that works out to $15,000 a month just from that, and there's more ways he makes money, and to watch him work. And they're not watching him work just because, you know, he's a good day trader. It's because he's very specific about this knowledge. He doesn't know about other areas of the stock market more so than, you know, the average person walking down the street. But when it comes to trading these futures, he is very specialized and expert. So therefore, he's getting these people paying him. He also does a webinar. Now, in his webinar, people pay him $900, and he showed me a list, because he only does a couple of months. He could do them more often, and I don't understand why he doesn't. But he has a list of people waiting, and he did one the other day. It was like 9 hours, and they pay $900, and he only takes 10 people in each one. And again, I don't really know the reason, but that's, you know, it's a $9,000 day every day he does that, and they're watching him. This is more of a training. Again, they're online, and they're listening, and they're watching him. He's showing them how to do this. Very specialized. Also, and many of you listening right now, and of course, all the members of the group know my history. I was a magician who happened to also be, you know, a skilled marketer because I had the knowledge, because I read a lot, I learned a lot, but I also applied it to my trade as a magician. So I took that very specialized knowledge as a marketer selling my product, being that of a magician, and that was my launch into the internet of writing a book. I wrote a 500-page book in a week. It was easy. The information just came out because I was so specialized in that. And the reason I was so successful in selling that book, I got $197 for a digital book, an e-book, and I sold over 500 of them in the first few months. It wasn't because there was another book available to magicians. There's tons of them. It wasn't because there was another book on marketing. There's tons of them. But this was very specific, and I got even more specialized and specific. It wasn't only for magicians who wanted to market. And I then chopped it down even further, more specialized and specific to the certain type of entertainer with the certain type of goals and desires that fit into my specialized knowledge, which also exactly corresponded to my experience that I was sharing and translating in the book about multiple streams of income, this sort of thing. So specialized knowledge is something very important and that's talked about in this chapter, this principle. Okay, here's something else from the book. It says, now, will you kindly tell me why I should clutter up my mind with general knowledge for the purpose of being able to answer questions when I have men around me who can supply any knowledge I require. This statement is from Henry Ford, where he was accused of not really knowing enough of a general stuff for whatever reason, you know, that this, he was attacked on this, and they were basically, you know, somebody was trying to discredit him. And so that was his answer, is why do I need to know all of it? But he had the specialized knowledge in a certain area and became hugely successful. Then he could take other people in his, as he grew his circle of influence, which actually is called a mastermind group, of which we, the $100 million roundtable, are all members of. See, we get this. We get this principle. Surround yourself with people with specialized knowledge. There are people in our roundtable, in the $100 million roundtable, each one of us has our own unique, specific, specialized knowledge that we each also tap into when we need to. So when something comes to mind, it's kind of like to be the go-to person. If you're the go-to guy or the go-to gal, something that means, hey, you want to know something about X, you go to so-and-so. And we do that. And we do that within our group. So having a inner circle, a mastermind group, is a principle which applies to the lesson of which we're discussing right now. Andrew Carnegie had a mastermind group. See, Andrew Carnegie knew nothing about the technical end of the steel business. And he didn't even really care to know anything about it. The specialized knowledge that he called upon among his employees and through his mastermind group that was able to make him so wealthy and successful. So you can tap into other people's specialized knowledge. If the people who really know one thing really well. Now, there's lots of people who are out there who have, going back to Don's lesson, are able to tap into maybe, you know, that other 90% of their mind, and some of those geniuses and brilliant people who are specialized in certain areas. But most people are specialized in at least one thing. They really know something really well. And I have two people who in my company help me technically. I have one guy who works for me full time and earns, you know, $15 an hour and does general kind of technical stuff for me. I have another guy who works for me quite a few hours, actually probably more than I would like, but because he's $100 an hour, and he comes in and he works for me with some very, very specialized, very specific. He knows the ins and outs of one particular software called FileMaker Pro that I use to run my business, a database, and he knows this specific program. His specialized knowledge on this one specific program is incredible, and I could have this general knowledge employee sit there for 10 hours at a cost of $150, where the other guy, the specialized one, in 5 minutes or 10 minutes out of his $100 an hour wage rate, he can do it faster and better, and then he can go on to other stuff. So the value in this person is much higher when it comes specifically to doing a specific task. Thomas Edison had only 3 months of school during his entire life. He did not lack education, neither did he die poor. That's right from the book. You see, it pays to know how to apply your specialized knowledge and how to purchase knowledge. So So knowledge, and this is right from the book, let me quote this, knowledge has no value except that which can be gained from its application towards some worthy end. So think about that for a moment. If you have all this knowledge, unless you can apply it to something, it's really not that valuable. Unless, of course, you're that guy in Jeopardy. Remember that? Just recently? Depends on when you listen to this. There's a guy in Jeopardy. He has all this general knowledge. He was making a fortune. That was supposed to be my comic relief guy. The Jeopardy guy. Okay, thanks, Don. I heard a little.
Yeah,
little...
and he's still not making all that much either compared to what a lot of these self-made millionaires are making.
That's true. The next principle here is apprenticeship proposed. So this is where the knowledge can be passed on, and we do that. Many of us in the group offer coaching, so we are very specialized in marketing in the home opportunity, business opportunity market. We all share that in common. Like everybody in this group is very specialized in that. Many of us do coaching, whether it be through a group, inner circle, or one on one. So we share this knowledge, and that way other people get to benefit from expanding their mastermind circle or whatever it may be with people with special knowledge. Here's something else from the book. Employers give greater consideration to employees who take home study courses. So again, it's taking specialized knowledge, applying it. Now, the home study course is only really good, again, if you turn that knowledge into skill. And I'm about to open this to the group, but a couple more points that I've highlighted in this fourth step towards riches, specialized knowledge. By carefully selecting highly specialized courses in colleges, best prepared to teach the subjects chosen. So back to that other point about home study, very specific courses, knowledge. And, you know, it pays to know who to purchase knowledge from as well. And you want to always invest your time and your money getting knowledge from somebody who's top of the field, who's really specialized. Again, you're not going to give your money to general knowledge type people. Speakers and trainers. To go out. Well, I gave the example earlier about how I would go and I would train the trainer. Who are they going to go train their executives? I was paid, and it's still available to me now, but I make more money as a direct marketer, and I've kind of lost a little bit of interest in going out and training. But I was paid sometimes up to, $10,000 for an hour just to go out and talk. I actually did one a few months ago for a larger group. So I'll still do them once in a while, but for an hour. And they're paying me that kind of money because I am so specialized in a very specific area. I mean, there's other people, speakers, who get, Tom Peters, they get $100,000 or $50,000 for an hour. That's huge money. Here's an example. When I was 16 years old, that's when I got my first car. It was a Slant 6, a Valiant, a yellow one, and I was proud to drive it. I wasn't even embarrassed, even though it was kind of a funny car for a 16-year-old to have. So I loved this car, and there was a problem with it. I took it in to the gas station. I didn't know what was wrong. And I remember this so specifically, not so specifically as far as the amount of money, but there, it was a few dollars only. I said, this isn't working, and I know nothing about cars still. The mechanic opened the hood, took him 2 seconds, and then said, okay, there you go, that'll be like $5 or something like that. I go, $5 only took you a few seconds. And remember, this is 25 years ago. And he said, yeah, I know, but, and he pointed to his head, it's the knowledge in my head that's been accumulated over this time. And I go, oh, okay. And I got it. I understood. I said, okay, well, that makes sense. Because, again, I could be there under that hood all day. Nothing's going to happen. And a couple little more points. The idea of starting at the bottom, working one's way up, may appear to be sound. This is from the book. But the major objection to it is this. Too many of those who begin at the bottom never manage to lift their head high enough to be seen by opportunity. And it goes on. So what is that saying? That's saying that, take your knowledge, go out and apply it. Turn your knowledge, your specialized knowledge, into skill. Go out and let people see you, and they will come to you. You can go from zero to hero very quickly by becoming very successful by taking your specialized knowledge and sharing it and showing people what you've got. Well, with that, and as you can tell, I didn't have to, well, you may not be able to tell, but I'll be honest with you, I didn't have to work myself up and think about a fourth child or anything else. I'm very enthusiastic about this, and I know there's other members of the group who are as well, so let me open that up to you.
Well, all of us are making millions of dollars or getting rich because of specialized knowledge, aren't we, guys?
Absolutely. One thing I wanted to stress was the really cool idea people need to get across, that you don't have to know everything you need to know. You only have to know where to find it. And what's really great about today is those electric buttons that Mr. Ford has along his desk. He said he's got a row of buttons he can press, and it'll summon a gentleman to his desk immediately who knows anything he needs to know. He didn't need to know all this specialized knowledge. And the cool thing is, with the Internet today, you're in so much better position than he ever was to know everything you need to know. And the other concept to get across is Randy mentioned it before, is this idea of continuing education. I love the way Napoleon Hill pointed to public education being free being its downfall. And it's when you pay for a course. He mentioned this correspondence course that he took, where they billed him every month, and he, after a while, started slacking off in the studies, but they sure didn't slack off on those monthly bills. But he made sure he completed the course because he wasn't about to be able to get out of making the payments. It's important to also pay for whatever specialized knowledge you wish to acquire, because you will value it. Your subconscious will value it for what you paid for it.
I wanted to make a point here real quick as well. I think, Alan, that's a good point about the pursuit of knowledge, continuously going out and bettering yourself and seeking out that specific knowledge, that specialized knowledge you need to better yourself. But I think, you know, there's kind of a slippery slope here and a scary spot where a lot of people understand that. It's very easy for people to understand that they need to continuously learn. You know, that was an easy concept for me to grasp. But one thing that I see, and Randy, you had mentioned that many of us coach people on a daily basis. That's one of the things I do on a daily basis, is talk to people and help them with their problems. But one of the things that I see is, despite how many courses, how many books, how many tapes, how much information a lot of our clients listen to, one of the biggest hurdles I deal with, and I deal with this on a daily basis, is getting people to take that first step and apply that specialized knowledge. And I think, you know, I urge everybody listening to this tape to really, when you learn something and you see the ability to take action on it and apply it, you know, don't hesitate to get out there and take that action. I just wanted to make that point real quick.
Sure, because if you don't, then it's just knowledge, and it doesn't become skill.
Correct.
It has to be knowledge applied.
Right.
Well, and Jeff Gardner, I want to pick on you a minute because, you know, I know that you have, and a couple of our other members also have a college education, which is what society deems as being something that's truly valuable and can transform your life and all that. But, how much is that college education worth to you when it comes to the millions of dollars that you've made?
Oh, dear. Well, you know, to be completely honest, I probably did get something out of my college education. You know, I went to a few great parties and met some nice people. But no, I mean, it took time out of my life. You know, I was trying to go to school full-time and run my business, and then thank goodness I finally graduated and I was able to focus full-time on my business and really make some money, because I know people right now who spent, you know, 6-8 years in college. Some of them are doctors, and they're making, you know, salaries that teachers are making, and that's what my degree is in, actually, teaching. And teachers make almost nothing. And you know, getting a college degree is not a ticket to, you know, millions and making all this money. And so, you know, they say, oh, you need to have an interest in everything and get all this general knowledge, when really what you need is the specialized knowledge. I mean, right now one of the things that I'm really focusing on is doing as little as possible in my own business. I want to spend all my time where the most money is, finding those great products, writing sales letters, which I love to do, but I don't want to do virtually anything else. I don't want to answer phone calls. I don't want to mail out letters. I don't even want to create the product. I have other freelance writers do that myself. I'm starting to do that in my own life, you know, hiring people to clean my house, hiring personal chefs to cook my food, you know, doing all this stuff, because when you have specialized knowledge, it's so powerful that you want to spend all your time doing just that. And everything else that you can hire out to people who don't understand that principle, who are doing this other stuff, you need to hire it out and focus all of your energies where you're going to get the most benefit. It really is a powerful system. And unfortunately, most people don't realize that. They think, oh, I need to, you know, be a jack of all trades. Well, you know what they say, jack of all trades, master of none. You need to master one thing that's going to make you a bunch of money, focus all your attention on it, learn as much as you can about it, really turn it into a profit center in your life, and believe me, you're going to discover that that's the way to get rich, not knowing a little bit about everything.
Well, it's important to note, too, that not everyone who's just starting out has the financial choice to make and has to serve as a jack of all trades. And the real problem, however, lies when the money is there and you're so reluctant to give those all those extra hats you were wearing up.
I think it's also, you know, a little bit of general knowledge is real useful when you are then delegating, you know, other people to do other work, because then you have a sense, a true sense, as to whether they really know what they're doing or not. And so having some knowledge about the overall, so starting off, like you say, Alan, if you don't, or Jeff, one of you just said it, you may not necessarily have the money to delegate it. You have to do everything. I think that's good. It's a grassroots approach, and then you have a general picture, and then you're better qualified to choose someone else to do these tasks for you.
Right, and in the beginning, when you're trying to be a jack of all trades, the nice thing about it is that it forces you to make some discoveries of areas that you didn't know about that you may even have a talent for. I mean, it's like Jeff said, he likes to spend most of his time creating sales letters. But I think the reason he does that is because in the beginning, when he had to be a jack of all trades, he had to write his own sales letter. And he discovered that it was interesting, challenging, and that he had a talent for it. And if he hadn't had to write that sales letter in the beginning, for economic reasons, he would have never discovered and developed his talent for doing that. So I agree about this, forming things out. I think it's a great idea. But I think that not having the resources in the beginning can also work in your favor and help you discover strengths and talents that you didn't know you had.
Right, and that will definitely happen. There also might be areas, like there's a certain area of the Internet, of web pages and marketing and drawing traffic and that sort of thing that I've always stayed away from. I'm just so not interested in that SEO, search engine optimization. And the last few days while I've been here with my friend Steve, you know, I've been reading more and more about it, sort of going through his library and thinking, gee, this still doesn't interest me. But I think I'll hire like an SEO expert to work with me and some of my clients. And Steve said to me, yeah, but you know what, do it a little bit yourself first. So you know what's going on, and you know you pick the right person, and I'm going to do that. I'm going to force myself through it. Now, I doubt this is going to happen, but it's possible what Don just said might happen, that I do it, and I go, oh, I love this. You know, I want to spend some time doing this because it's so much fun. Yeah, in this case, I don't think that will happen, but who knows, right? And there have been things that, like I didn't, actually the sales letter is a great example. I just went out and wrote my first few sales letters, and same like as Jeff, probably because I was the only person there, you know, in the company when we both started. And I love it. It's something that I've thought about delegating, but no, I want to do it, and I think it's real important that I continue to do that. So that's a task that I'm so specialized in and skilled at for what I'm doing. I'm going to keep that one.
Well, hey, those are two great principles that we've covered on this audio cassette tape, and very, very powerful. I hope that our listener will go back and listen to them again and again. Again, if regular knowledge, the kind that society makes such a big deal about, you know, we're supposed to all send our kids to great colleges and get them this degree, if all of that really helped people get rich, then there would be more than 2% of the whole population earning over $80,000 a year.
There'd be a whole lot of professors quitting teaching.
Well, that's
they'd be making all the money.
Right, it's the professors of the world. Would be living in the mansions. And
no offense to professors.
Right.
Let me add something quick here. I think that the value in education, and I'm not real authority on this, because I only did 1 year of college after high school, then I got sick, and then decided just to be a professional entertainer and not go back. But the value of the education that Jeff and other people who have achieved is to learn how to learn how to think through things. So if the information is general and not really related to the real world, the skill of learning how to learn is very valuable. And to me, that's what the real value of education is.
Well, hey, Randy, that's a great place to end this tape. Please go back and listen to this again, and let's go on to the very next tape, where we'll cover two more exciting principles from Napoleon Hill's classic millionaire-making book, Think and Grow Rich.